Welcome to your Monday Night Raw review. We're going to get things going in just a minute with thoughts on Drew McIntyre versus Randy Orton continuing and having a championship match next week. Riddle being the final member of the Raw team in a very bizarre, unlikable segment as these five grown men continue to fight over who's the captain. Lana gets put through a table for the eighth time. Could this actually be setting Lana up for something big at Survivor Series? We're going to discuss that and so much more right after this. FLY, First Love Yourself Fashions, is a fashion movement. FLY Fashions is meant to be an eye-catching and trendy representation of personal style. From skinny jeans to the skirt and blazer look, graphic tees are always in season. Fly Fashions is a line of self-expressive tees and accessories for women and men. Fly expresses your mood while adding to your personality. From members of the Natural Hair Sisterhood to expressions of faith and everything in between, Fly Fashions designs empowering self-expressive styles and accessories to speak your truth to the world in style. Fly gives you a trendy and attractive way to voice your self-love and personal style. They offer fashions that make it fun and easy to be you. So be bold and express your unique self. Shop Fly Fashions now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? 'Cause Stone Cold said so.
Hey everybody, welcome to the WWE Podcast for this Monday Night Raw review on November 10th, 2020. Hope everyone is doing well. Everyone hasn't lost their sanity yet, and you've just stopped watching the news altogether, because no matter what network you watch, it just gets overwhelming. So I hope you all are doing well and you're taking time to relax. It's Veterans Day tomorrow, or probably today as you listen to this. So take some time. Do something fun or relaxing. And again, Veterans Day obviously is only for our United States listeners. I know I have international listeners, and I know that it's only applicable to those living in the United States. But no matter where you're listening from, thank you for choosing to do so. Sit back and relax as we cover Monday Night Raw that came to you from none other than the Amway Center with the Thunderdome. And it looks like WWE's contract has been extended. Their current one with the Amway Center doing the Thunderdome thing ended October 31st. So clearly, they got some type of extension. I think that's a good thing. I do not need to be back in the Capital City Wrestling Center, i.e. the Performance Center. I don't need that. We all are probably over that whole scene. And so I would say stick in the Amway Center until we can bring fans back in a real way. So I don't know when that's going to be happening, considering COVID spiking everywhere, but sooner than later. I mean, eventually this whole thing has to either be indefinite or resolved. Like, either we get a vaccine, people get vaccinated, everything's good, or it just continues and the virus just continues to spread up and down, kind of pulses in and out, and we live like this forever with masks and social distancing, and we can't do concerts, we can't do sporting events, and we all just are reminded on a daily basis of what our lives were like before March of 2020. So anyway, let's take you out of that reality, out of the election news, out of COVID, and whatever else may be going on, and talk some wrestling, because we certainly had a interesting Raw. That's what I really kind of landed on a word of. It was an interesting Raw. It kind of felt this same way last week when I said it felt like a Raw that was a by-the-numbers show, kind of a maintenance show, whatever phraseology you want to use. It felt like it was just there, and that WWE creative said, well, we got a lot of time between now and Survivor Series. Let's just kind of come up with some stuff that's not not very progressive in terms of storylines, but just kind of keep things as is. And it felt that same way this week, kind of being a safer show. I think next week will be much more progressive, because the fact that, well, it's a week before Survivor Series, and I think they'll start to ramp it up. I mean, we got about 2 weeks, so that tells me that next week things should ramp up in a big way, considering it'll be the go-home show. And we got a big WWE Championship match next week with Drew McIntyre versus Randy Orton. And you know what? I'm getting a little bit tired of seeing these two fight as well. Not as much nearly. If you're talking about tired of seeing two individuals fight or a program going on, it's Rey Mysterio and Seth Rollins and that whole angle. I mean, there's not even one that's close. There's not even a close second on that. So if you feel tired and weary of Drew McIntyre versus Orton, just think of Rey and Dominic versus Seth Rollins. I mean, and it'll make Drew and Orton feel like a brand new rivalry. I mean, it's insanity over there on SmackDown. And I'm sure Seth Rollins is getting absolutely sick of this, and Rey Mysterio is probably loving it, trying to cling on to relevancy. But certainly, Drew and Orton work well together, and you know, I'm looking forward to it. Do I think there'll be a title change? I mean, let's be serious. What I think is going to happen is, get ready for this, we're going to have maybe Roman Reigns come on to Raw, sneak onto Raw, and cost Randy Orton the match. Not for the championship, of course, but for just losing the match. Maybe he just causes a disqualification, which means that he doesn't have to change hands, and you still get the end result of getting a nice build to Roman versus Orton at Survivor Series. Do I think McIntyre captures the belt and faces Roman Reigns at Survivor Series? I'd give it a half of a percent of a chance. Like, there's a 99.5% chance that that is not the case. Because why would you... There's zero reason for WWE to have that match happen at Survivor Series with a one-week build. It's stupid. So I would give it almost no chance. Really, really close to no chance. But it certainly is a match that we all want to see. Right? Or, McIntyre versus Reigns is a match that we do want to see on a bigger stage with a much bigger build, not on 1 week on a whim with a match that really means nothing on top of it because the championships aren't on the line. So that is the last place that you want this to happen. So I expect Roman Reigns to maybe have a quick glance next week on Raw, show up because, hey, just because there's no reason, Roman Reigns can maybe be chased out by security. I mean, that's a possibility. At least if they do that, it'll make it look like that person's not supposed to be there. But they'll give no explanation. Or they'll say, oh, he's not supposed to be here, but then there'll be no security, right? I mean, and Adam Pearce's crack security team isn't exactly an award-winning team, right? So that's my thought for next week in terms of the main event. Now, obviously, this is a Raw review, and I'm going to get into the details of the McIntyre-Orton dynamic. At least, look, McIntyre's keeping with his promise of every time he's in the building with Orton and in the same building, he's going to try to, he said he will beat Orton's ass. And he's actually adhering to that. I like that they're following through with this, which is actually really surprising. But I am ready also to move on from these two. It's time. It feels like it's overstayed. It's welcome. Three is a nice number for a program in most cases. And this one's no different. And, I think it's going to be a good match, but I mean, what else could you expect from two absolute professionals? So, all right, well, we're going to get into Monday Night Raw in a second. I just want to let you know, tomorrow's our Wrestling Nostalgia, and what's happening tomorrow is the theme that I've been continuing with of the Undertaker Wrestling Nostalgia theme through Survivor Series. So that means this week and next week will be Undertaker-related, and per requests of a couple of people that have sent me on Instagram, I will be doing the Undertaker, a little bit of a review on the ministry and the corporate ministry. If you remember those angles back in the late 90s, early 2000s of the corporate ministry and the ministry of darkness. So certainly that should be interesting. Great suggestions to those individuals. You know who you are. Thank you. Great, great, great idea. I haven't really mentioned the corporate ministry or ministry of darkness really at all. So that'll be fun tomorrow night to cover. And also tomorrow night, I'll be recording a brand new mailbag show. So that will be dropping on Thursday, but not that you care when I record it. You only care when I drop it. So tomorrow's nostalgia, you'll see it late night. And then a mailbag will be coming on Thursday with round two. So anybody that sent me voicemails over the last week, I will be answering them tomorrow night, released on Thursday. So early Thursday morning, you should see the mailbag episode 2 come your way. So send those questions to realwwepodcast at gmail.com. Or, of course, the most efficient way is to actually call the show. And that number is 518-952-0247. So get your voicemails in now. Maybe let me know what you think about Raw, what you think about Undertaker coming up at Survivor Series as the final farewell, which I think is nothing more than just a final angle for The Undertaker revolving around The Fiend. How can you not do The Fiend? It's a perfect time to start a WrestleMania program for Undertaker because you have from November to April. Yeah, it's 6 months, but Undertaker can get himself into great shape. He's shown us in the documentary series of how dedicated he is, and probably more dedicated than most people realize. I think that there was this common belief that Undertaker kind of just comes in, does one match a year, and that's easy to do, and he doesn't really get into shape. Well, we've seen the complete opposite be true with the documentary series. So the six-month period between November and April is more than enough. Undertaker can kind of come and go. You know, The Fiend can do something dastardly to The Undertaker. We don't see Undertaker for a while. Maybe at the Rumble, there's a gong, right? And then Undertaker returns in late January, early February to challenge The Fiend at WrestleMania. I mean, it's a pretty much a story that writes itself. And he could declare that win, lose, or draw, this is it. And why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you promote it as such? I think The Undertaker has kind of possibly let go of the fact that he needs to have this perfect match to end his career. I don't think the fans have that expectation. And I think that he probably doesn't and shouldn't either. And he should just call this 6 months out, because not only will it for sure cement the end of his career in ring, but I think it will also allow WWE to promote the hell out of it. I've always said, if Undertaker's going to have a retirement match, why wouldn't WWE want to promote the hell out of it for a long period of time? Get subscriptions, right, to the network. That's what it's all about. Viewership on TV, that's what it's all about. They're a for-profit organization. So I foresee that being the case. If Undertaker has no angle and he just comes out and does the greatest hits and someone gets a choke slam and says, you know, now it's time for me to rest in peace or something like that, I'll be really honestly disappointed at Survivor Series. I mean, because it'll be nice, but I'll be a little bit disappointed that I never got the real closure, right? Like, I never felt like I got the real closure from The Undertaker. Yes, we saw the documentary series, and yes, he said that it's time for the Cowboy to really ride off into the sunset, but he also left it open-ended. People assumed that was it, but I don't know why we're all ignoring the fact that he said if Vince ever needed again, would he come back? And he said, who knows, right? That's not a no. That's not an I'm officially retired. Until Undertaker says, this is it, this is my retirement match, I don't believe it. I don't need all these little, like, read between the lines phrases of the Cowboy rides off into the sunset. No. Until I hear the words, this is it, I don't buy it. So I'll be shocked and I could eat my words. But hey, maybe I'll get it. Like I said, I could get a nice slice of humble pie. And that's fine. I eat humble pie all the time, being a wrestling podcaster, analyst, reviewer, opinion columnist, whatever you call it. I get it all the time. It's just a food that you just learn to love is humble pie. So, okay. So nonetheless, guys, that's the schedule. Lots of stuff coming up this week. Obviously, we have the New Japan Pro Wrestling Show, which I got some really good feedback on, is coming to you again this Saturday. And then Friday is your WWE Rivalries. And we have a Sunday night Weekend Review show that is our flagship show. So lots of content coming this week, of course, Wrestling Nostalgia and your mailbag. Alrighty. Well, with all that said, guys, let's jump into the details of Raw. I went over a little bit of Orton and McIntyre, but I want to talk quickly because the next thing that comes to mind, as you know here, we don't go on any kind of usually go on a chronological order of events that happen on Raw, but the next thing that pops into my mind, and it's part of the title of this show, is Lana. There's some things I want to say about Lana. Now, I will be the first to admit that I have been saying for many, many weeks or months now that I want Lana off of my TV screen. She needs to go away. She needs to go away. She needs to take some time. She needs to be repackaged, rethought, retrained. I don't know. Just maybe all of the above, promos, class, whatever it may be, so that we can get a better version of Lana that we all know somewhere in there is there. It exists. Just pull it out. And after the Bobby Lashley angle went into the toilet, you know, which we all knew would be eventually in the toilet, and who actually enjoyed that, I don't know. But she was kind of just clinging on to that and being annoying backstage. And we never really understood where they were going with her. They just seemed to seemingly put her on TV to put her on TV. Well, then she signs a 5-year extension with WWE. That seems to be confirmed. Obviously, it wasn't put on air, but through many other wrestling sites and sources that everyone else can look up. I don't have secret sources in WWE, but she signed a 5-year deal, and I think they are going to reward her shortly with a big-time win. Now, what do I mean by a big-time win? Do I think she's going to become women's champion? No, not right away. So, Lana has been, over the last several weeks, buried, figuratively, and almost literally, by Nia Jax. 8 times now gets put through a table. She faced Shayna Baszler this week, which was as short of a match as you would expect, but not for one that you would think that somebody that they're focusing on to build into a big time star, you would have them lose in this fashion pretty decisively in a near squash match. You would normally expect that. But here's what I think they're doing. They are burying Lana so deep that the only way here is up. I mean, they are completely burying her. They're making her look like this frail, insecure, lack of confidence type of character that even in the ring lacks a bit. And week after week, she's getting put through a table by Nia Jax. Now, that is, I don't know if it's part comedy, or if it's leading to something bigger. I'm going to go with the belief that it's actually leading to something bigger. So what is it, right? Like, what am I talking about? So when you bury a character so deep, and yet you know that WWE Vince is eventually going to do something big with this character, you can't go any further down, right? To me, Lana making it onto the team is telling that she's going to actually win it for the team. Now, is she going to dominate? No. I think what's going to happen is she'll be put through a table early in the match, forgotten about, kind of Royal Rumble style, when somebody's not eliminated, but they're outside the ring, and you know that somewhere in the back of your mind, oh yeah, they're not actually technically eliminated, and somehow they end up winning a match. It's a formula I think could work here. So what I think is going to happen, early prediction, at Survivor Series, is that Lana gets taken out. She is down and out for the majority of the match, and you have her team get completely eliminated. And there's one person left, or a couple of people left on the SmackDown side, and Lana ends up coming in to sneak in a win. A roll-up, right? Somehow, some way, Lana will pull it off, and she will be the sole survivor for her women's team on Raw. You heard it here first. I think that's what they're setting up for. I really, really do. So how about that? I mean, look, Lana to me has never been great on the mic. I've never really been a fan of her on the mic. And she's kind of like Dana Brooke-like. Dana Brooke, her and Mandy Rose were on commentary this week, saved her from the initial attack of going through the table. And Dana Brooke, even backstage, can't even, you know, come up with a couple of lines that she has to remember. I mean, she says words wrong. She's got a weird delivery. Dana Brooke is a great athlete. That's not the problem, which, again, shouldn't be the focus. Everyone in WWE are great athletes. I mean, that's just a fact. What differentiates you and what creates success or not is a character that people can cling to, that they understand, that's deep, and it's likable, right? Or truly dislikable, and you're a great heel. Dana Brooke is just kind of like nothing. Dana Brooke's just existing. And I don't think that's, you know, necessarily her fault. I mean, sitting on the outside only, I don't know any of the intricacies that go on in the production meetings or whatever. I'm sure Dana Brooke is very rarely mentioned other than, hey, where can we fill in somebody to take a fall in a match, or when someone else has got nothing going on, let's pair them with her. I mean, that's what Dana Brooke feels like. And I know that she's got more to offer. She is kind of awkward on the mic, and she's just weird. She's good in the ring. She's, again, great athlete. I don't know. I don't have a lot of confidence if you're a Dana Brooke fan that they're going to exactly put the belt on her. So, Mandy Rose, boy oh boy. She goes from the focal point of SmackDown to a forgotten duo with Dana Brooke. But certainly, the women's tag team division could use more tag teams. Otherwise, kind of by default, pretty soon you'll just have Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax going unopposed as the women's tag team champions, which kind of is already happening. All right. So that's my thought with Lana. She ends up winning big at Survivor Series because I think that's what they're setting up for. No one's thinking that, right? I mean, I haven't heard anybody make that prediction yet. What else happened on Raw here? Well, we got a United States Championship match between Titus O'Neil and Bobby Lashley. Believe it or not, this may be the first time I've said this on this show. Titus O'Neil cut a really good promo. For the first time, maybe ever, that I can remember, Titus O'Neil cut a promo that actually made me feel something. Made me feel that he felt something, maybe. Titus O'Neil actually stood up to Bobby Lashley. And after getting rejected from the Hurt Business the first time, we had MVP tell Titus that since I respect you and you all the charitable work you do for kids, I'm going to give you the chance to walk away. And he didn't. And he challenged Lashley and he got beat. But perhaps Titus is an underutilized talent. Beyond being that PR spokesman that does charitable works for WWE, maybe there's more. I'm not saying that he should be WWE champion, but perhaps there's more there that we didn't all see before. And I'm not talking about sliding under the ring as a Royal Rumble entrant, although that's one of the funniest things you will ever see, ever. For love of God, for all that is holy, if you have not seen this, you have no idea what I'm talking about. At the greatest Royal Rumble in Saudi Arabia a couple of years ago, you have to Google this. YouTube it. Titus O'Neil slide. You'll see what I'm talking about. It was not meant to happen. And if you've seen it already, I'm kind of telling you to go see it again. Or maybe you're already there. It is just classic. Corey Graves couldn't even contain himself. He was laughing so hard. He was in tears. So I just think that Titus O'Neil, my point is, he showed me something that he hasn't shown his entire career to me. That it's not just Titus Worldwide, it's that he actually can cut a decent promo and have a little fire. That's what I saw, and as short of a promo as that was. I can't believe I've been talking about Titus O'Neil this long, but there is something there, and I don't think they'll capitalize on it. I just think that he executed it very, very well. His lines were very well done and believable. Bobby Lashley retains the United States Championship. I don't see any reason why he wouldn't. I mean, can you imagine Titus O'Neil versus Sami Zayn? I mean, what was that? Come on. Like, some of these are just silliness. But boy, oh boy, have we had a lot of championship matches lately, haven't we? Giving away SmackDown Women's Championship matches on free TV. We're giving away WWE Championship matches on free TV. We're giving away United States Championship matches on TV. Boy, I mean, is that really helping the ratings? I don't know. I'm not a fan of it. It's all about network subs. And to me, giving away championship matches on free TV was a luxury. It was a luxury back when wrestling was booming. It wasn't an expectation. It was a privilege. You felt like, oh my God, the championship's going to be defended on Raw. Are you kidding me? You don't have to wait for the pay-per-view? That's how you felt. That's really how you felt. Now it's kind of like, oh yeah, they're probably defending on Raw or SmackDown. What? Duh. All right, well, I'm going to get on a rant, so I'll stop. But what else happened on Raw here? Matt Riddle. And yes, on this show, he still has a first name. I really, really don't understand WWE's logic for cutting out Matt. Now, again, I'm a little bit biased towards that name, but at the same time, Riddle is not the same thing as cutting Antonio from Antonio Cesaro. Cesaro actually ended up working out. I don't think anyone, even when they did it, I was like, okay, I could go by that. I mean, look, in high school or college or wherever, maybe you had friends that you actually referred to them in their last name. Maybe you had friends like that and it just seemed to work. And, you know what their first name is, but you call them by their last name. And it just seems cooler in a way, right? And it worked out for Cesaro, Antonio Cesaro. Yeah, I see why they did it. But they've done several others since then. Several others. And now they did it to Matt. And the problem with this is they left the part of the name that by itself is silly. If you have Matt Riddle, at least the guy has a full name that you can refer to. Now we just have to call him Riddle, right? And I made this joke the last time, and so did Jim Cornette. But how WWE didn't see this? I mean, the guy is literally an R away from being in a Batman movie. Yeah. I mean, you guys know what I'm talking about, right? The Riddler? He sounds like a joke. Is he a riddle? He's a guy that, you can't figure out. Everything's a riddle. No. I saw anything but this week. When it comes to character, Matt Riddle is a 1 out of 1 to 10 as a character. Again, in ring, no problem. In ring, the guy is really good. He's a legitimate athlete with the true athletic credentials. Legit badass. That's not what's on trial here. Because when you get into WWE, what really matters? Your character, your personality, your persona, your charisma. In ring, you can work on that. It's not about all having 5-star matches. What draws people are characters and stories. And right now, Matt Riddle as a character is a 1 and went to a 0 out of 1 to 10 this week. I cannot. Not only is he positioned as a goofball, but he's positioned as a babyface being a total goofball. So unlikable. Does anybody else feel this way? I could be totally by myself here. Because I'm not a fan of New Day, and I'm also not a fan of the Street Profits, the way that they act either. The way that they come across as everything's a joke. Everything's got to be, in some kind of lingo. I'm not a fan. Or an inside joke. Everything's funny. Oh, here come the pancakes. And, what's up, fam? All this stuff. Which, by the way, somebody, thank you, whoever it was. I would give you credit, but I can't. I don't have my phone on me right now. Somebody, when I asked and was complaining about Jey Uso calling everyone Us, said that Us actually means brother or bro. Well, and I believe you. So thank you for the translation. However, that still doesn't help Jay's case. So even if it's translated as bro, well, number one, Matt Riddle has that, and that so you can't use that in terms of the actual English language, but it doesn't help. I don't need you calling everyone bro or oos, as is the translation. Why do we have to be cute? Why do we have to be above calling people by their names? I don't care what it really translates to. The fact is, it doesn't need to be said. Just call people by their damn names. Ugh. So Matt Riddle, back to my bit of a rant on his character, is so unlikable. It's really just mind-blowing that they continue to put this guy out there as a babyface, acting the way he does, like a big just jock, head of the football team, or the D-bag, head of his fraternity, president of his fraternity. That's how he's acting. He always looks like he's like half stoned. I'm not a fan of his jiggle anymore. The fact that he slides off his slippers, everything he does right now, character-wise, I want to differentiate, is just completely skin crawling for me. And then this week really put the nail in the coffin for me for his character. As a babyface, he comes up with nicknames. He comes up with nicknames for everybody that's on Team Raw as everyone was at each other's throats, standing in single file line to make sure that they're all standing at the hard camera, because we all talk to each other out of the side of our faces to make sure we're all facing the camera. Ugh, that's another rant for another day. But Matt Riddle gives everyone nicknames, calling AJ Styles Skipper. Calling Sheamus, God, I hate saying this, Fireface. I mean, we are now in Tater Tots territory. I'm referencing a Roman Reigns promo that really is iconic at this point. I feel secondhand embarrassed. Anybody else know what I'm talking about? Secondhand embarrassment is when you're watching something, you're not directly involved, you have nothing to do with it, but you feel embarrassed watching it because you feel ashamed at what you're watching. It's embarrassment at a level that I don't even need to be involved to feel embarrassed. It's not funny. It's not entertaining. It's childish. Having Matt Riddle, and yes, we're still using his first name on here. Matt Riddle, the guy that has actual athletic credentials, a martial arts background, comes out and tries to create nicknames like, hey, chill, man. Everyone chill, bro. Take a hit, right? Like, that's what I feel like he's going to say. It really was just awful. If this wasn't a PG show, there's a lot of colorful words I would use right now. You could think of them. It really, I don't know what to say. I was that put by it with Matt Riddle. I really, really don't know how they are just continuing him to be a babyface. I mean, nicknames, are we in, sixth grade? And furthermore, nicknames are things that just happen. You don't assign them. If you didn't know, that's an organic thing. You don't just announce nicknames. So not only does he not in WWE Creative not get how nicknames actually happen, number two, it wasn't even funny or entertaining. And three, it was as childish as literally like middle school. Go to any middle school and they will probably even laugh at you there. It was awful. And these guys continue to fight over who's team captain. Like children in a cafeteria. I can't really have any other analogy in my head other than being in grade school and people fighting over who's going to be the team captain in gym class. Seriously, this is what it feels like. And it feels like this every year. Why are we grown men getting paid 6 to 7 figures caring about who is team captain, of which there are no benefits afforded to the team captain other than the title of team captain? I say this every year. Why is this a thing? And then we have to go through the whole story that is just the same story they run through every year. Oh, the people on the team don't like each other. Are they going to be able to get along at Survivor Series? It's the same tired, recycled routine every Survivor Series, a pay-per-view that I called last week a throwaway pay-per-view. And it is. And that is sad for WWE's one of their big four. Survivor Series is a throwaway pay-per-view beyond the side effect of advancing the actual match or the actual programs that are happening on individual brands. I'm not talking about Raw versus SmackDown. I'm saying if there's a rivalry happening on Raw and somebody from Raw interferes in somebody else's match from Raw that's facing a SmackDown opponent and cost them that match, then that furthers that storyline internally. That's what I mean. Outside of that, it's a waste because it's an exhibition pay-per-view. Okay, let's find something positive here. Alexa Bliss. Boy, she just gets it. Now, The Fiend did not show his face on Raw. I did not see him there. That's a good thing. He was mentioned by Nikki Cross, who said, basically gave Alexa Bliss an ultimatum. It's either him or me. And Alexa Bliss was counting flowers as if she was doing the he loves me, he loves me not. And then blows the flowers in Nikki's face saying, I choose him. And then claps and, kind of just trots away. Every time I see Alexa Bliss, it's, he is not far behind, but she's in it and she's always had a believability about her. She's all in. Alexa Bliss is just brilliant and she's showing it. And the Nikki Cross angle is interesting. I like how they're not just kind of dumping her aside and Nikki Cross is actually getting involved in this story because of how close they were before The Fiend attacked her and shoved his fingers down her throat. So this is a very good role for Bliss that I hope she stays in for quite a while. I hope there's not an antidote or she suddenly snaps out of it like she's hypnotized and realizes all of her faults, that she, you know, all of the things that she's done, and oh my God, and she's woken up from like a nightmare. I hope that's not the case and they continue with this. This adds depth to obviously Alexa's character and makes her more relevant than ever, but also the Fiend, that he can have some kind of following. He has the ability to really change and almost possess people to follow him. It's a very dark character, and this is great stuff. So how about that for a positive thing? All right. We also have, again, the triple threat with Sheamus, Hardy, and Riddle, Matt Riddle. Again, I mean, you know, putting these three individuals in a match, you're going to have a really good match. But that's not what I look at. I don't just look at the quality of the match, of which WWE thinks fans only look at. Guys, wake up. Can we stop caring only about the quality of a match? Can we care about the story, which actually adds or subtracts from the quality of a match? We're so focused on the athletic, it's giving WWE a pass to have crappy creative. See what I'm talking about? Is anybody... All right, I think I've gone on this rant. Let me just talk about the match here, because it gets me so fired up about this, the way that the product is viewed today, with just so much emphasis on athleticism and so little emphasis on storytelling being a thing for WWE. But this match was exactly what I thought it would be, and that's good. Very fast-paced, kind of everyone gets their crap in, right? Everyone gets their moves in, very fast-paced. It seemed as if WWE said to these three before they came out, look, you guys only have 6-7 minutes, so go out there and have a barn burner match. And everyone's like, okay, well, I'll do this spot and this spot and this spot. I got to get my stuff in. You get your stuff in. And you, then, you know, this guy over here will get his stuff in. And then we'll all get our stuff in and we'll be happy. It felt like that. It felt a little rushed. And that, to me, I'd rather have a slower match with kind of some up-tempo spots, but not 100 miles an hour the whole time. And there's no ebb and flow in those kinds of matches. It's just gas. All gas and no break. And some people love that stuff. Not my cup of tea, but you know, I mean, again, these guys put in the effort. Matt Riddle ends up being victorious after hitting the Broderick on Sheamus. So Sheamus continues his downslide. But then he had an interesting, again, that was a Raw qualifying match to be on Team Raw, of which, again, Matt Riddle won. Sheamus then had an interesting interaction backstage with Drew McIntyre. Now, initially, I figured that these two would be friendly. Then all of a sudden, the conversation takes a turn. There'd be some tension. The next thing you know, they're either brawling or there's some kind of stare down. But no, this actually ended up being fairly peaceful and friendly. And Drew telling Sheamus, hey, after I recapture the WWE Championship, we're going out to basically drink our faces off till 4 a.m. I mean, that's what he said in a PG way. And Sheamus agreed. I mean, yes, those two were a pairing early in WWE, Drew McIntyre's career in WWE. So, yeah, they were a pairing. And that's what they're pulling on. But I have difficulty believing that these two can actually be friends in WWE fantasy land. I have a feeling that once Drew McIntyre loses to Orton next week, if Reigns doesn't interfere, and it's possible, if Reigns doesn't come in and spear Orton and cause a DQ, I think Sheamus could cost Drew McIntyre. If Sheamus costs Drew McIntyre the match, Orton stays champion, as we all believe is going to happen and should happen. But then you have Drew McIntyre now looking for revenge on Sheamus. Yes, Sheamus is part of the Raw team against the SmackDown team, 5-on-5 at Survivor Series, but that could be a thing. Now, what is Drew McIntyre doing at Survivor Series? Don't know. So he has, and he will be somehow involved at the pay-per-view. I just don't know what capacity. I would assume if Sheamus interferes, he could cost Sheamus his elimination in that match, and then, you know, these two are off to the races for a month or two. That's my thought. But it was interesting that between a babyface and a heel, even if they were friends in the past, and we've seen this, it may start off friendly, but at the end of the promo, you know these two are eventually going to fight. And in this case, it actually got better in terms of the relationship between McIntyre and Sheamus as the conversation went on. It got more and more friendly, and you're like, whoa, that's kind of weird. You're waiting for someone to make a look, you know, change it from a smile to a grimace on their face, and it didn't happen. So, interesting. I like the fact that it wasn't very routine when it comes to that dynamic. You often don't see baby faces and heels interact in a friendly way at all backstage. So, interesting to see where that goes, if anywhere. So, the tag team match we got between Riddle and Keith Lee versus Braun Strowman and Sheamus. This was the second match for Matt Riddle. And it was it was a good match. AJ Styles being the special referee was probably the most interesting part of this, because you don't see too often, you don't see any more guest referees. Does that ever happen anymore? I mean, this might be the first guest referee spot that I've seen in quite a while. So that was fun to see. It felt like I was playing an old video game where you have the guest referee mode. So the ending of this was the bro kick was hit on Sheamus, and then it set up a roll-up by Matt Riddle, and Lee and Riddle walked away victorious. But now, as WWE phrased it, Team Raw is as fractured as ever. Oh boy. Do we really have to have the same old tired storyline every single Survivor Series about fighting over team captains? Oh my God, the team's not going to be able to get along. How are they going to do it? They've had tension. It's the same tired garbage. And oh, by the way, there are no real consequences for losing this match. You know, kind of a footnote. Oh, Lord. Okay. Asuka defeats Nia Jax by DQ in a non-title match. This one, the announcers made note of their past and that they do have a past, and that's true. And would I like to see Nia Jax versus Asuka for the Raw Women's Championship at some point? Yes. Asuka has been all but forgotten, and she's the Raw Women's Champion. They've had her in comedy segments, bad ones, with the Street Profits when they were there. I mean, she's been literally doing nothing. So it was good to see her back in competition and stop being the wacky, zany, a Japanese woman that just speaks in her language and is over-emoting everything. It's nice to see her in the ring doing what she does best. So in this case, Asuka got the Asuka lock on Nia Jax, and that's when Shayna Baszler interfered, causing a disqualification, which obviously ended up in Lana getting put through the table for the eighth time. So this match didn't last long, but I do suspect that sooner than later we will see Asuka versus Nia Jax in an actual match for the Raw Women's Championship. I do suspect that. You would also have to remember, though, that Nia Jax is a women's tag team champion. So would you want to put a belt on her, have two belts on her? Maybe, considering that the women's tag team championships, well, they don't exactly mean a whole lot. All right, R-Truth emerges from a seven-way match with the 24/7 title. Well, Lucha House Party is certainly back to being completely irrelevant, but R-Truth took advantage of the shock to win the 24/7 title for a record 44th time and took off for the exits. So this was a tornado match of sorts, and it was Akira Tozawa, Eric, Drew Gulak, Tucker, Grand Metalik, and Lince Dorado. So, yeah, that's pretty much that. All right, moving on. Mustafa Ali defeats Ricochet. Oh, my God. This may be the first win that Retribution has put in the win column. So, here's the description that WWE has in their notes. Following last week's brutal assault at the hands of Retribution, Ricochet set out to get payback against Mustafa Ali. Ricochet went flying to take out the ringside members of Retribution, but he came up empty when he turned his sights back on Ali. The leader of Retribution was set on showing Ricochet the light and grounded the high flyer with a Koji clutch for the win. So, wow, Short match, but which is really weird considering the fact that these two could have an awesome match together. I mean, there's just no doubt. So perhaps that's what they're building to. But Mustafa Ali gets the first win ever for Retribution. Oh, what a sad, sad angle. I mean, it's sad. All right. In the main event, we get Drew McIntyre and The New Day defeating Randy Orton and The Miz and John Morrison in a Teddy Long special of a six-man tag match. So this was nothing more than a stepping stone, if you will, for getting Drew McIntyre versus Orton next week hyped for the WWE Championship. It ended with the Claymore kick and him staring at Orton as Orton was walking back up the ramp, kind of backtracking. I don't really have much to say about it. It was just kind of your standard six-man tag. It told the story you needed to tell. It wasn't super exciting. It wasn't super engaging, but it was what it needed to be. So I'm not crapping on it. It did exactly what it needed to do. Get you at least as excited as you possibly could be. Again, I don't know who's at the edge of their seat for this one, but it's for the WWE Championship. And I also think the reason they're doing this with Drew is so that the fans of Drew McIntyre can't get angry that, oh, he didn't get his opportunity. He didn't get his rematch, right? He didn't get his rematch. So what are you supposed to do? So now he's getting his rematch. He'll lose it, but he's getting it. So that is tying up that end. And you know what I was also thinking of? If this rematch clause that is kind of comes and goes in WWE, where it's just kind of a foregone conclusion that when you lose a championship, you automatically get a rematch for it. And then during the draft last year, a year and a half ago, they said, oh, it's antiquated. We're not going to do that anymore. And then they just continued to do it. So my question, though, is beyond that inconsistency is, if I have the championship, if I have the WWE championship, and I drop it to you, the listener, and then I get a rematch and I win it, and then we have a rematch because you lost it, and then you get it. Like, does it ever end? Does the cycle ever end? You know, does the person who wins the belt have to win two matches in a row for the rematch clause to be fulfilled? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, if we keep fighting back and forth and every time we fight, the other person wins the championship, does it ever end? No, just food for thought. I don't think that's ever happened. I don't know. I think of these weird things. Sometimes it's just I'm laying there watching Raw and I'm like, you know, I wonder. But anyway, so that was Monday Night Raw. Again, very kind of standard, not bad, not great, just felt like last week. And it felt like a whole lot didn't get accomplished, but we move forward in small ways, taking baby steps to get to Survivor Series. Again, this whole Survivor Series is focused on Undertaker, as it should be, for 30 years in WWE. That's just absolutely amazing when you think about it. So tomorrow, as I said, we will be doing a Undertaker corporate ministry / ministry of darkness kind of review, but more of just kind of a look back at those two factions. And, you know, then beyond that, the mailbag episode 2 comes your way Thursday, as well as the NXT review with Zach Smith. And Friday is rivalries. Saturday is SmackDown review. And New Japan Pro Wrestling. Yes, New Japan Pro Wrestling. And then Sunday's your week in review. So it's like 6 more shows to go this week, guys. It's just insane. So hopefully we're able to take your mind off of all the silliness going on in the world. And that's what we do. I think it's more important than ever for these kinds of shows to exist. Not just mine. Because I'm certainly not the best voice out there. I know that there are much bigger podcasts out there wrestling related. But really any podcast or entertainment platform that you can watch to get your mind off of anything going on is certainly, I think, more important than ever. I mean, it's crazy what's going on. So, okay. Well, that is everything for me today. I hope you enjoyed the show. Consider following us on anywhere that you have a podcast app, particularly the Apple Podcasts app. Give us a rating and review on there. It really does help us, preferably a 5-star rating. And anywhere else that you find us. We are on Spotify, we're on Spreaker, we're on iHeartRadio, we are on radio.com. We are just really everywhere. So please subscribe to us there. I know Spotify listeners, it's growing pretty well there as well. I know that is the second most used platform to find our show. So certainly consider following us on Spotify. Tell a friend about us if you love us. And I will talk to you next time.